G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 6A.
Well, I'm very happy that you survived the first 5 hours, because they were the most difficult ones for the whole week, as you will see. And as I said during the last winter when I was preparing for the summer school, I wasn't quite sure if I should have the courage to present you the purely intellectual, academic side of a holistic science, because I felt I should do it so that we have a good basis on which we can investigate the nature of, or the concept of, science that Mrs. Eddy had and which she had as a basis for her textbook. So I hope that up to now things were not too muddled up and have been giving some kind of a ordered background. Somebody yesterday gave me a poster from the Office of Engineers, and I like to read that poster to you. It seems so right to the occasion of yesterday, not of today, of yesterday, which says, "We have not succeeded in answering all your problems. The answers we have found only serve to raise a whole set of new questions. In some ways, we feel we are as confused as ever, but we believe we are confused on a higher level." "And about more important things." So this is as a summary of the first 5 hours. And so now I have to prove that we can put more order into this scrambled concept. And we can do that in a much easier way now that we go to our subject, capital B, which says, "Christian Science fulfills the fourfold aspect of holistic philosophy." So now we start for a day or two to show that what we have seen yesterday is actually the basis on which Christian Science builds. And so we go through the same points and same ideas that we have taken yesterday, but now we apply it to the teaching of Christian Science, and so you will feel much more at home in my explanation. The title alone perhaps gives rise to some question that Christian Science fulfills the fourfold aspect of holistic philosophy. That term philosophy comes in, and I think when we look back on the many years of our teaching and also on John Dorley's many, many thousand printed pages, that term philosophy hardly ever has appeared in our teaching. And so today and this week I will bring it in, because it is a term that Mrs. Eddy uses quite often. Just as we have the term science that she uses very often, but uses it in two very different connotations, namely science as capital S and science with a small s, meaning that science which is capitalized as that science of God, whereas the other sciences are the sciences of the human mind. In the same way, or nearly the same way, Mrs. Eddy uses the term philosophy like science in two ways, in a divine connotation and in a human connotation. And this is necessary because philosophy is that which gives us first the groundwork or the framework of our whole world view. Science is subsidiary to it. Science only then tries to give the method of how we can explain this worldview. So actually philosophy is a much larger concept than science, because without a philosophy, without a worldview, perhaps you know the term Weltanschauung, that has come from the German and is in the Webster Dictionary, gives perhaps even the better sense than a worldview. A Weltanschauung means the way you look at the world in order to give to that view a meaning. So a worldview is not big enough as a concept, because a Weltanschauung gives meaning to that worldview. So perhaps you get accustomed to that term, which, by the way, I read very often in the English and American books and articles. It is not really a word that you can't know. You see, we have to see that we first have to consider that we live in a world, and we have some kind of an approach to that whole world, to our whole life. And we say to ourselves, now, what is this world? Does that world make sense? Does my life make sense in that world? How should my life be conducted so that it makes sense with the sense of the world? And that are all the questions of philosophy. Philosophy has a very nice root from the Greek, which means love for wisdom. So we can see, if we translate it into the seven synonymous terms, it is a question of love and mind, a very high aspect that we find in the science order, as you know, love and mind, which says, do we have that wisdom that can see the whole meaning of the world, the meaning of being, the meaning of our life? So this is the biggest question, so to say, that we have to ask ourselves when we have a certain Weltanschauung, certain worldview. Then we can say, what means do we have to use in order to understand this worldview better? That then would be science. And then we would come to the question of science. So you, I think I can show you in this way that the subject of philosophy is something that we should also consider. And if you take the concordances to textbook and to the prose work, you will find that there are dozens and dozens of most interesting references to philosophy. Again, it is the pursuit of wisdom by intellectual means. That's how it is defined in a dictionary. It is therefore the investigation of causes and laws that underlie reality and are based on logical reasoning. So it is not just an emotional worldview, philosophy. It is a worldview that we should think out with the help of reason, with the help of science. That's why philosophy and science have to go together. Weizsäcker, which I have mentioned various times, and I like to mention European thinkers, because then you can acquaint yourself also a bit with what happens on the other side of the Atlantic. We are not sleeping over there. We are also awake. We also are thinking. but because mostly you only know your own language and don't read very much in other language, it's perhaps a help if from time to time I introduce also what we are thinking on the other side of the Atlantic. And naturally, I don't introduce just anybody of those thinkers, but those that have world reputation. So Weizsäcker says, how could we define really a philosophy? And he gives a short answer and says, well, it's perhaps just reducing it to a few words, saying it is asking fundamental questions. Is asking fundamental questions about the world, about our world, our place in the world, and what it is all about. So the question, do we need a philosophy, would therefore be answered in a very positive way, that actually we need a philosophy. Naturally, in a holistic age, we need a holistic philosophy. That is a divine philosophy and not a human philosophy. Just as we need a divine science and not human sciences in order to understand being, in the same way we need a philosophy that is based on a divine basis, on divine fundamentals. Weizsäcker also says, for the revolution of science, philosophy is indispensable, and that's so true. Again, in this small sentence, you can see that philosophy should really be the first question before we ask the question of science, because science then is only answering how we can understand, how we can look deeper into that worldview, into the Weltanschauung that we have. And so, because this Weltanschauung is changing from age to age, from epoch to epoch, science has to change too in order to adjust itself to the new worldview. So a revolution in science, therefore, is necessary. And for this, philosophy is indispensable. We have seen that we are coming out from a rather narrow concept of worldview, from a nationalistic concept to the worldview of one world. And this is a great leap, a quantum leap, so to say, a great paradigm shift in our consciousness. That demands another philosophy. It demands, therefore, also another kind of science. Now, the question we ask now is, what kind of philosophy did Mrs. Eddy have? What do we find in her work? Well, I said as a first point that we have to see that she distinguishes very clearly between a human philosophy and a divine philosophy, which would mean more or less referring to our work of yesterday, that the human philosophy is a philosophy that was built on the human mind, just as the old science is built on the human mind, whereas the divine philosophy is a philosophy from God. Divine always means referring to God, to divinity. And divine philosophy, therefore, is a holistic philosophy and demands then, consequently, a holistic science in order to understand in more detail this divine philosophy. Therefore, we should not be sidetracked by those many, many statements, especially in the prose work, where Mrs. Eddy runs down human philosophy. So she does it and must do it because she can see that that those philosophies that are resting on the human mind, on human conceptions, on human thinking and reasoning, that has an origin in the human brain, in the human mind, in human logic, and that therefore this is contrary to Christian Science that goes out from a divine origin, from a divine mind. So if we first take the negative sense of philosophy as human philosophy, we find in Mrs. Eddy quite a lot of references. I just want to state a few of them to pinpoint why she refuses human philosophies. She says that human philosophy never taught or demonstrated the divine healing of absolute science. Her first rejection is that these philosophies were never teaching a divine healing method. They were always trying just to appeal to logic and to reason and to the conceptual sense of our understanding and not to the Christ-saving power. They never gave a healing method that would translate really the divine to the human. She says human philosophy has no demonstrable divine principle of healing. This is always a great rejection that she has, that human philosophies do not go out from a divine principle. They go out from human reasoning, from the rational thinking, with rational logic. She says that human philosophy is mainly predicated of matter, mainly, not always, mainly predicated of matter. There are also idealistic philosophies, but those idealistic philosophies are not the idealistic philosophy that stems from the ideal that the divine mind has, but from the ideal that the human mind has. They are mostly pantheistic because they believe in mind, in matter. That's also one of her objections. And makes God man-like instead that it makes God God-like. It makes God man-like. And it has clouded God and history. So we can see some very sharp objections towards a false sense of philosophy. That does not mean that all through the ages there were great attempts to have a divine philosophy. And Mrs. Eddy refers to those attempts, naturally mostly because she relies on the Bible. She refers to the divine philosophy of Jesus, for instance. So Jesus had his philosophy, so had Paul, and so she speaks about the philosophy of Christian Science. So we see that these great thinkers like Jesus and Paul, they had to have a Weltanschauung. They had to have a worldview with meaning in it and with a very divine meaning in it. So they had a philosophy, just as Christian Science has a philosophy. It's interesting how she says in the textbook then at the end of the chapter on Genesis that very impressive statement that she said that Christian Science may absorb the attention of sage and philosopher, but the Christian alone can fathom it. She indicates something that is supporting really her system, that actually a holistic philosophy should be four-sided. It should not be just engaged in the word aspect by explaining reality as what reality is, but it should also have a Christ sense in it, then also a Christianity sense in it, an attitude sense in it, and then the foresight of science in it. So she could see that sage and philosopher, they could be very much interested, really, in the Christian Science textbook. They may be fascinated in one or the other way by it, but they could never and will never really fathom the deeper meaning of the textbook, because only the Christ spirit in us, the Christian, can fathom it. Because only then, when there is a spiritual agreement between reality and our inner attitude, consciousness, that's the Christ, the spiritual agreement between God and man, only that spiritual agreement, that Christ mind within us, then can really see deeper and deeper into the textbook. You see, this is not just an academic question. It really applies to every Christian scientist. Every Christian scientist is, in a way, a philosopher, because he's interested in reading the Christian Science textbook. He wants to get hold of a new worldview. He wants to get out of an old worldview, say, of an old theology with a God who loves and hates, etc., and finds that Mrs. Eddy presents a completely different worldview, a worldview from one God, from one principle, the principle that is always good and harmonious and only does good and only brings the good to mankind. But if they are not, if they have not the Christ spirit, if they don't read the textbook with the mind of Christ, and usually they read it with the brain, then they cannot fathom that textbook. And that's the tragedy that we see in the movement with Christian Scientists, that they can read the textbook over decades and decades and decades all their life, and at the end of their life they feel, actually, I have not understood much more than when I read it for the first or tenth time. This is because only the Christian can fathom it. We have to see that it needs a holistic attitude, a Christ mind. That's a holistic, because the mind, with a capital M, only the Christ mind can really fathom it. Can you see, and perhaps remember, those who have been with me since the first time I came to America, or the second time way back, that I would always say, practically in every summer school, I would always say, if you open the Bible and the textbook, and if you try to study those two books, first give some time, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, to scientific obstetrics, so that you are aware that you are only going to read the textbook with that mind which has dictated that textbook, and not with another mind. Or else the study is in vain. It's just reading terms. So we must see this very thing, that only the mind that is God can really understand that mind which has dictated and written the textbook. Only the Christian can fathom it. She says that in divine philosophy, truth is casting out all inharmony. So we can see the value of a philosophy, if it is a right or a human philosophy, if it really can heal, can heal the body, that it can solve our everyday problem. About the divine philosophy, she says, it is the true idea of the Christ. Now, the human philosophies, they don't talk about the idea of the Christ. They don't yet quite see, though they see that the divine is translating itself to a human plane, but they can't quite see what that is, what the divine mechanism of translation is. Actually, only the sixth chapter in the textbook with the scientific translation of Immortal Mind has given an indication how the mechanism of the Christ translation really works. So true philosophy needs also the true idea of the Christ. Furthermore, she says in regard to divine philosophy that it embraces really a spiritual Christianity, and that is the deeper philosophy, that it embraces a spiritual Christianity, not a human Christianity. Actually, we could say that it embraces a Christianity, namely a manhood that is of the nature and stature of the fullness of Christ. Only that is a factor that belongs to divine philosophy. Christian Science, she says, is the soul of divine philosophy. You see how she indicates really that divine philosophy is more or less the overall category, and that Christian Science gives to that overall divine philosophy really the heart and soul, the content of it, explains the content of it. But first we must have the big framework, the big worldview, in order to choose the right method of investigating that divine worldview. She makes even a statement that is quite interesting insofar that it touches, so to say, the fourth side of the city. She says that divine philosophy is not the search after wisdom. You see, a philosophy means really love for wisdom, and is usually then read as the search for wisdom, that is the philosophy, that philosophy is engaged in the search for wisdom. She says that divine philosophy is wisdom. It's not the search for wisdom, but it is. And she italicizes the term is wisdom. This gives us a really good roundabout sense that Mrs. Eddy saw that her presentation is a new philosophy that distinguishes itself completely from a human attempt of having a right worldview.